John Von Ova, and beginning of the visit was Rick. This John Von Ova, and a continuation visit with Wade was Rick. This Sunday afternoon, 8th of October, 72. John Von Ova, and a continuation visit with Wade was Rick. This Sunday afternoon, 8th of October, 72.
Troy just did it on general principles. He's on.
Troy hasn't been in that long then.
That's the second meeting he attended.
Well, he didn't have a chance.
No, third meeting, because in March, April was the first meeting, so elections in March, and then April they had a meeting in which they turned over the reins.
Yeah.
Mr. Barr made his farewell speech, and not a lot got done, and our plan was, I mean, the biggest thing was changing it from that little place to the town hall.
And that was April.
Made that plan then, and that's what we put off. We'd been planning the planning and zoning, and instead of doing it the first meeting, we let that go by, and so timing was right for that, and we had the people, and everything was perfect, except we didn't have the council. mercy.
When Troy came in to the council now, he had that big briefcase?
No, that was bought for the council. Oh, definitely.
Well, that's not Troy's briefcase.
It is his, but he bought it for the council meeting.
That's really?
Sure. Absolutely. And that was so the story I told you about him falling down, coming over the walls in the rain.
Yeah.
He came over with short pants and Oxford shoes of some sort just to shoot the bull. I mean, hell, we were just sitting around chatting about nothing in particular. He brought his briefcase.
And didn't leave in his car. I take mine all the time while leaving the car.
Now he's acting chairman of the council.
How did he wind up making over? Have you any idea?
I've never asked him that. He's been there probably 3 years, I reckon.
He's been there longer than that. And he can't used to live out of town. Now he lives in town there somewhere,
mm-hmm.
doesn't he?
It's right up the street towards the interstate. And he's got a pretty redneck type family, you know, upper class redneck, you might say, but I mean, it's no display, no education shows at all in any degree.
Oh, really?
And no feeling for anything outside of the everyday affair. And like their taste is all trailer taste. You know, they went to buy a trailer, they'd buy one with really the biggest plastic chandelier in it. Pay extra $500 for that.
That's his family.
The girls look, there's a bunch of girls, three or four or something like that, and they all look a little bit slow when you look at them.
Well, how old is he?
I reckon he's around 35.
Is he that much?
I don't know. Probably 30 to 35, but I don't know.
Well, none of the old McNulty people are in the council. It's all the newcomers.
Well, we're going to get Thelma in now. So that should have a little spark. We got Walt running and Thelma. And, of course, our friend Chimwell still maintains he's going to run, but he hadn't signed up yet.
Yeah.
They got Walt and Thelma on there. And Troy, it ought to be right interesting.
Yes. Yes, with Thelma. It's amazing how one person can change the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thelma's got such a light touch about her.
Oh, yes. And she keeps aware of the solid things. But she'll just blast it out.
Now, you never went to one of the old meetings.
Just a couple, that's all.
But you did go.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wish, like I say, that hindsight's killing me.
In that library, that little library?
Yeah.
And watch them transact business?
I watched the one on the fire truck, and that right amazed me how they handle that. And what else did I catch? I mean, it was really beyond me. I just couldn't take it in. But if I, you know, if it'd been directed in there and stuck with it, could have made something out of it. But the way they handled that fire truck was, here they were buying a major piece of equipment for the town, and I knew that none of these men knew the first thing about fire trucks, and the people that were selling it were specialists in selling used fire trucks, And they sat there and they dickered over price and vast sums of money. I mean, it's all, you know, hundreds of dollars difference. Just back and forth. And Barr was just as cool and collected. And Morrison's there, you know, and this pair was really something else. And transacting this barter business, bartering. You know, because the city government doesn't barter. They found out what's what, the price on it, write the contract out, they either approve it or don't approve it. They sat there over the table like a bunch of Chinamen and bartered over this fire truck.
They haven't seen it.
I think some of them went out and looked at it, or either the man drove it down there that night. I think that was it. I believe he did drive it down. And see, I'm not a businessman like that. I get all upset and figuring if I don't buy this car, it's going to be the last bloody car in the whole world. I mean, I'm a salesman's delight.
Yeah.
They can absolutely get me.
Yeah.
You know, once I need to buy something, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And so it really grated on me that these guys could sit there and pass up what seemed to be a good bargain just by dickering. With it, and I couldn't understand it for hell what they were doing.
And Mr. Barter too.
Yeah, they're all in it. The two of them were the prime people, Morrison and Barr.
Yeah.
And they just grumbled around about it, this, that, and the other. And like I say, they don't know the first thing about a fire truck. It's impossible if they do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's highly unlikely to know anything about a truck. And then old Clara writes in that extra $1,000 on the truck that just came out of the blue. You know, it's a contract signed for $2,000 on the truck. And then they pay $2,000 and they wind up owing $1,000. It's just another $1,000 just jumped right in there. I hope men wound up getting their money out of it.
Yeah.
They wrote it in as hoses and equipment or something like that. See, they came in, they barred them all around, and they bought the fire truck, didn't have any equipment, all set to buy equipment too. But that never came out in a minute. It wasn't public business.
Oh, yeah.
It just was, check was written for it, that's all.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how much money's made off of these small towns, because it was a sharp man could walk away owning the whole town if he attended 3 meetings. Just hook up to it and pull it off. And then everybody'd be happy. They'd be standing there with a quarter in their hand thinking they got a bargain.
But now, old your new mayor, he figures now it's an open field right straight ahead for him.
He's power's gnawing his back too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard to get into that. That's a drug.
Yeah.
You talk about heroin and stuff. This power thing's a little bit worse.
Yeah.
He complained bitterly about all the workload and how much he'd much rather be cutting his backyard than doing that. I hadn't heard him say it recently. And Bill Proctor's sort of laying low with him. They used to be thick as fleas together. He was always eating over there.
That's right.
And his wife would baby him. She's never said a word to me. I don't know why. I've never said a word to her other than hello, but she won't say hello back. She'll answer the telephone.
You mean the handwriting?
Yeah, and I'll say, hello, how you doing? She said, just a minute.
She sits out front of that trailer?
No.
No?
No, they live next to the trailer. Joe Thomas's house.
Next to the trailer.
No, they had that house with a big fence and the 5 poodle dogs. Or 6 or 8 or 12 or however many it is. It's the first house on the street going back of the gallery. Just turn down that street from the gallery. It's the first house on your right. Got a cyclone fence around it.
Mm.
A big old stump tree that goes up above the house, an old stump.
Oh, I was on the wrong side of the street.
But she don't say hello.
she never says hello to me. And I've spoken to her on the street with, you know, recognition, no word. But she babied Bill Proctor like he was her son. And old Proctor really tore it with him last week. He went to North Carolina and Joe took him to the airport. And he was supposed to come back Wednesday. He came back Tuesday and didn't call Joe and tell him. So Wednesday, Joe goes out to meet the plane, and Bill's been back in town for a whole day, and he's hopping mad. So Bill was over my eyes and said, I'm trying to avoid Joe. That's why I said he told me that story. But even before that, Bill sort of been indicating to me that Joe's sort of taking things in his own hands now. Stepping out and doing stuff on it, and hell, I'd noticed it before. Like, I don't pay that much attention to the whole council thing. The budget business was coming up, and Joe had been mumbling about this budget for 2 or 3 months, and he showed me this budget, that, and he says, "Oh, this is just a rough." I said, "Well, good. You know, somebody ought to be thinking about it." And really, sort of didn't come up in front of the council, because I attended all the meetings and nobody really talked about, well, it's time for us to discuss the budget, or let's have a budget committee to get together to determine this budget, do some research on the budget, or have somebody make up a budget for us from a CPA firm. There's Joe made up the whole bloody budget. Well, that 2 meetings ago, whenever it was, all of a sudden it's on the agenda, budget. They read the budget out. And so I put in a minor complaint about they put it up for adoption. And I said, well, look, maybe we'd better think about this budget a little bit. Oh, no, it's got to be voted on tonight. If we don't vote in the budget, we don't get our share of the revenue sharing plan. But you can't share any revenue unless you have an adopted city budget. So the only budget around to adopt. Nobody's going to go crank out another budget before 12 o'clock that night. That was the night they had to go over to Ward's house to do this kind of stuff. Have a meeting on his front porch.
In order to get everybody there?
Get a quorum. Good Lord. But he did that, and he did that planning thing. So he just sort of took over that with the planning business. And these doctors coming out, he said, there's 3 PhDs came down there and talked to me about this. All PhDs, they got PhDs. They're from the university and nice as it gets, but they know what they're doing. They came down and talked to me. And he was done in. He had 3 PhDs sitting there talking to him. He got power from that. You don't walk away from 3 PhDs without climbing the ladder a little bit. You know, you crank up just a little bit after that. It's like having 3 angels, isn't it? You got a little more power of God in your soul.
Now that's since the which meeting did you approve the budget?
Think it was the 31st, that 31st meeting of September 31st.
Yeah.
I believe it was that night. If it wasn't, it was very shortly before that.
Yeah.
Because they said it had to be done.
It had to be done.
The 31st was very definite. We had 12 o'clock to get that ridiculous.
That was August.
No, it was September 31st. No, it wasn't. You're right. It's August.
That was that meeting they kept continuing.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
But it had to be done that night. This was the licensing thing.
Yeah.
Charging for license and who gets license and what.
All those business licenses.
Yeah. Business license.
Oh.
That's
Are you
the,
there?
That's the one I got so upset about. Yeah, he was there.
Part of it.
That's when Chimwell walked right in the middle of my talk about it, and that's when I sank to the floor. All I did was see him, and I knew I had it coming. He didn't care what I was talking about. He was going to get it. He did. That was a meeting when he took it over, see. I was called it, you know, I said, it's just archaic. It's ridiculous. He just drug that up from something back in the 1800s. And we're paying an attorney to do something like this? I said, is it going to make up a, whatever they call them? I never can.
A business license ordinance.
Yeah, ordinance. I said, we ought to make up one that's sensible. And actually, nobody told me until the very last night that it was all a matter of procedure and they're going to cancel it anyhow in 2 months' time. So I got a little hot and bothered about this thing, you know, charging $700 for a phrenologist and $7.50 for the pulp mill to operate the crate mill. I thought that was a little loaded. And so anyhow, I made a few pretty decent statement about it. I tried to keep it really toned down. And Shimwell got it, bonk, like that. And he says, I'm sure that if Mr. Foles did this, it's perfectly right and legal. He's one of our finest attorneys. And he went on about it. And wait, I just don't see, this has got to be legal. And that's when I, man, people that can do you in like that, it sure is something. I mean, the way he gets us, all of us there. Walt did the same thing, everybody.
Oh, did he get Walt too?
He got Walt. He got two or three other people. And he sure got me. And I turned around and said, Don, I didn't say whether it was legal or not. I just said it was bullshit. And old Ward says, any more out of you? Any more of that out of you? We're going to run you out of here. He really put it to me right there. But, I mean, Don pulled me right into it. You know, I was, I meant it. I didn't care what was legal or not. I said it was bullshit.
didn't want the meeting. Didn't want that kind of language in the meeting.
He pulled my cork good. I mean, I wasn't really. I know a lot better than that.
This thing that Rick worked on, he had it up pretty good shape, and I read it and made one or two little suggestions to him, and I thought that's the shape he gave it to you. That's fine. Well, it's not a finished product, but you've never seen one that was, and he made some steps towards handling this little revolution making opiate. We made some steps. And I'm right proud of it. And I took it in, we took it in to Alton. I don't have a hearing. I don't get a hearing much, you see. You're not supposed to work through the people here anymore. You're supposed to work through organizations. If I have anything to light for the world, I'm supposed to read a paper in the South Atlantic Modern Language Association, someplace like that, you see. That's right. there's too many here, and they're too specialized, they're just not getting through it anymore. So, but I don't, you see, I don't have an organization, and I don't, I didn't want much. And, I told Alton that it was promising, and I'd seen so much now of what we could do, and it looked to me like all the department was going to be doing was just to keep me on the payroll and sort of box me in, give me one upper division class every year or every 2 years.
Your own cookie. Yeah.
And if I find somebody interested, see, I can't keep them because they're going to put them with other people. And Alton, this is reception. Rick talked to them longer than I did. They had a nice visit. I went in the next day. Rick had told me a little bit. One thing he said to me was, he says, now this is all this stuff you've got here. You've got a whole lot of stuff. He says, I suggested to Rick that he take it to Ad Cruz and let him help him make something of it. Ad Cruz.
I know. You don't need to explain him to me.
And, in other words, he's going to...
Put in that Southern literary style or whatever they call it, that school, bloody school they're into.
he's going to make a short story out of all this. Now, you, if you can get any closer to the solution than that, I don't know how you do it. And he didn't pick up anything that I had suggested to him. And I always tell him ahead of time what I want him to see. But he wouldn't see any of it. And I told him that there wasn't any place for me. There's just too much going on there. And so many of them are so important. And all I wanted him to do was suggest, give me a little, he didn't have to vouch for me, write a little letter of recommendation or anything. If he just give me a little cue as to somebody I could get to. He knew that at all.
Harry Cruz was his cue.
He said he thought he'd better talk that over to the head department. And before I left, he said, now, I sure hope that you're going to be able to will this material to the university. And I had already said to him that the university now, all last year, I had sounded them out and worked with them. And I found that they weren't interested in it, and the ones that listened to it didn't hear anything. What they heard wasn't there. They didn't know what I was talking about or what the people were talking about on any of the records I've got. I said, and if they don't know now, they won't know in 50 years from now. But he chose just to ignore that. So you see, I got the whip hand because I got the stuff, and they want it. And,
they want you to will it to them.
Yeah.
Damn.
And,
you
see,
you wanted something today, and they want you to die and give it to them.
Yeah, that's right.
So they can put it in the archive.
That's right. It'd just be a feather in Alvin's cap, you see. Another one of the academic feathers he's got in his cap. That he got all this stuff from this this fella here who was good at some things. It'd just be a feather in his cap. That's all there'd be to it. And whether anybody ever looked at it or not, he wouldn't give a damn. Well,
you've been better
oh
off.
Yes, that was I took you in that little tape we made here one day where I started off and I laying it off a pretty big way and brought up that spy before it was a big deal. Well, you were relating some sayings about nothing in particular, and but it's all good natured. And Rick took it in there and put it on the machine and took it. Took it up, advanced it past my me, till it got to you. Well, what did he do? But take it back. The first thing he heard me running down spy business, my boy, with a pigtail. You see, and he brought that out to him. Then he brought it out to me, and I said, if spy never hears anything worse than that, he gonna be lucky. I didn't give an inch on him up there. You see, not one confounded inch did I give. No, sir. Not an end. You see, I've got them in the position now that they can't push me around. Well, that don't matter about that. Well, you know, I got to thinking. Texas, you see, Faye, little Faye, did you know her? The niece.
Mm-hmm. One is with the architect?
No. Yes. Oh, yes, you knew. Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Well, you see, they've done well out there. Did you know that? You knew a little about
little
it.
Bit,
but I never could get the real information for you. You see, she pooped out. She washed her hands of him once he got through, and she wouldn't even tell me what went on out there. Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? That's what I have to deal with. The very thing, you see, that would be useful, just the thing that you were doing over there. Those little cockalorns out there had all that experience and got recognition for it, and she wouldn't sit down there 15 minutes and tell me what she'd found out.
Yeah.
then she wrote a, she spent a week or two writing down what she did on her first summer down here when she was working with me. And I wrote her back and I said, you know, that's all speculative. You didn't know what the hell you was doing. It's all intellectual positions that you didn't understand, and I wasn't sure of them. But anyhow, it sounded like it wasn't that rough.
Well, what's
it's ridiculous.
You got any...
Well, let me tell you what. Out there, what they said is, out there, you see, they, if you get in the right, if you get in the right channels out there, they don't want you to stick around on the campus and write CMLA articles. They want you to get out and see what's going on in the world. If I could get, you know, sort of connected like that, we could just all go out there. And they got money, that Texas money. Lord help us. They got money. And if I get about the grant, $50,000 a year for 3 or 4 years, that's all I want. That's good enough for me. So that's the way my prospects.
Did you tell Alton that?
No.
Well, I don't know why you didn't let that right out, and that would have settled him. That would have settled him right off if you'd said it straight like that to him, just like you said it to me, and that's all I'm interested in, and I don't want any more than that. That's enough.
He says, what's Rick going to do? He likes Rick. He really likes Rick. He says, what's Rick going to do? I said, hell, Alton, I don't know what Rick's going to do, and I sure in hell not going to tell him what to do. Well, he says, how's he going to avoid taking some graduate courses?
Watch me.
So you're going to turn him over to Harry Cruz and take some more graduate courses. Now, I'm telling you, you got the world in your hands whenever you're up there. And he sits back in that air-conditioned office, and he gets over there at 5-7 o'clock.
Oh, he does.
He likes it over there. It's his meat. He's been there since 1930, and he's had that same nice office ever since he's been there.
Oh, it'd be hard to get him out of there, then.
It's hard to get him out.
He nice. He does things for people. He actually holds it together.
But that
But he doesn't look at it from my point of view. I mean, he a great deal of the time he looks at it from the point of view of the institution.
I hate to see. I haven't done too much reading about it from these characters. It's Cruz syndrome. I don't really care to. I've always had in the back of my head, and I really hate the thought of it. But there's something you have to fight. Now, it shouldn't be that way, but they're like a big stick. And it really hit me hard when you reported that, what he said. I mean, it's sort of upsetting, to tell you the truth. Because I know these people. I know where they came from, their attitude, their cliquishness. Oh, they've got a bloody religion.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to be a believer
to
handle that stuff.
Be
it's
a bit.
It's organized.
Yes, you got to be a member of the lodge.
Oh man! Oh, any part of it? It's really amazing.
It's a technical language they handle,
and they call it fresh, and I don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, they. I don't want to run that business.
Now, what I'm wondering is, you totally failed there. How do you get anybody to listen to you to start with up there? And what in God's name are they going to do with this stuff?
That's it.
Just what are they going to do with it?
All it is just going to be a feather in Alton's cap. That's all there is possibly could be. He wangled this out of a fella here.
Well, you've been a lot better off. You've been collecting old tractors and stuff because people at least look at that.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody has to do anything with it except set it out there.
That's right. It has been more pleasure than anything I ever did in my life. It has opened up things and furthermore made more pleasure for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
That's the truth.
Yes, sir.
I see it day and day.
It's amazing thing. You see, I've heard these people talk like Miss Daisy down here, and no one else has ever heard her talk like that. They don't know she can talk like that. She didn't know she could talk like that. Why, she still falls up here in that beautiful language of hers. Why, it put us to shame. Mm-hmm. I don't have any language. Say, so it might put you to shame. Just to hear her. You just retire and turn over to somebody else when you hear her talk. And she can barely sign her name. But I'm telling you, she can report what's happening in this country. The parts of it she's seen, and she has seen a large amount of things that you wouldn't guess. Just remarkable things. Now, they don't come out all of a sudden. You got to take them when they come.
Well, that's... I don't know was the media blame or what, but people are so used right now to getting their dose and pills,
yeah,
and pop it right down,
yeah,
that they don't want to sit through any what to call bullshit.
Oh, no.
And wait for a good piece of meat to come along. When I took this real estate man, it wasn't the same boy I was talking about to start with, another fellow, not the Townsends. And he's a big deal Cadillac driver. And I said, well, let me handle him now. Don't you say anything. And so I was talking with him, and he got fidgety. And when we finally left there, he was a nervous wreck.
That's right.
And he thought that was the most ignorant, stupid people he had ever heard in his life. And I kept trying to sort of indicate, well, you know, just to hold on to it. You know, the people do say something. Did listen to him once in a while, and I started to let him read up the little portion I got written on, but then I thought, hell, he wouldn't read two sentences of that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if, I mean, if it was written down clear. And but there are, I was trying to get around to the point of that when you let people, when you start talking about this kind of stuff, and then to some people, they'll start listening, and it does change. I mean, it changes a person. There's been a lot of that going on in Micanopy with people come down and they'd be sitting around. I said, just listen to that guy talking. And Jack Sanders would be talking. Just check him out, because they sit down and damn redneck, you know. They just cut it off. Just listen. Next thing you know, they're in love with the man. They think, you know, that, my goodness, what a brilliant person. Sure. Yeah, all you have to just listen to him now. Be quiet and listen. And so they hang around long enough, they soon understand that Jack's got a quality to him. Somewhere down there, he's got a quality. He sure doesn't wear it outside.
I couldn't imagine that happening.
It doesn't happen deep, guy, but it happens. Enough for them to see that if they'd listen to somebody, they'd change.
Yeah.
And none of they know damn well none of the people they hang around with can talk,
yeah,
about anything except, and it's always a direct one-way thing, and it's generally second-handed stuff they're handling,
yeah,
books and whatnot. They're all frivolous people that I know up around there.
I've had my fun with this, and I can keep on. But now I'm saddled with a whole lot of that material in there, and it sort of ties me down. And I don't know, someday I might just dig a little hole and throw it in it and just let it go. I give it to Rick or somebody. He don't have anything to do with it, no. It'll saddle him. See, he couldn't handle that. Miss Daisy's tapes is a whole year, solid year out of it. Yeah, what he'd make of it, he'd spend a lifetime on it.
What's his, Alton, what's his name?
Alton Morris.
Morris.
Yes, and they are all helpful, you see. Morris has been helpful. The new head of the department, Dick Green, has been helpful. Ward Hellstrom has been helpful. All of them been helpful. You see, they just got a system up there that it goes back to Noah's flood. Actually, it don't go back that far, and it's a vile system.
Is there any way out? What could I say to him?
Not a thing. I thought so for a while. I've got to get clear out of, I don't know what, I've got to get clear out of that mentality. No.
You know, this Brad Fisher guy, he just mentioned that his wife was up here loading D. Fisher.
You know him?
I met him about 5 years ago. Norman knows him. But he's quitting the university and trying to go to Santa Fe.
Well, he got fired.
He had enough. Whatever.
Well, he didn't exactly get fired, but something or other, and they dropped him.
I don't know. That's stifling.
Norman knows him?
Evidently. I don't know where he ran into him, but he's quite impressed with him.
Oh, really?
Enough to want him to come on over to Santa Fe and give him a recommendation.
Oh, really?
You know
his wife?
No, never met his wife.
I guess Norman knows
him. I don't have any idea. But that's stifling. That's killing. That when you run into that system and break your bloody neck running into that thing.
Oh yes, that's right.
Now that guy, there's a thing. There's things that we can do with this. You can make it public. It would be very well done in cinema using your tapes. You could do a beautiful cinema.
Yeah.
Elegant thing. Make a series of 10, 15, or 30-minute TV things on that. I don't think it should be too heavy, maybe 10 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Because, see, people can't hold up under this kind of thing. They'll always wait for the point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, okay, now, all right, now what have you said? Let's bring out a point.
Yeah.
But it could be handled in cinema by itself, and I it would be so much harder to try to put it into a written form and sustain.
It won't go in written form. You transfer it from voice to writing and it's lost. There's no power left. It just won't work. Now,
That's two different worlds we're working in there.
Oh, yes.
We're working in a second-hand translation on Micanopy, you might say, or talking about it.
Yeah.
And we aren't handling directly the people,
yeah,
as they say it.
Yeah.
And so it's two different worlds. But this tape, a couple of them that I've heard, like Miss Anna.
Yeah. Well, I was going to play John Turner for you, that last little thing. He did. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful little thing. I'll play it for you.
Well, I better. It's after 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
I left my kids on the clock. Well, paying for it.
I gotta go over there. We gotta bail that hay.
The best. I wouldn't be for myself to do the whole cinematic thing, but I'd be. I mean, I know it can be done, and it needs to be directed properly, and it could be put into fine shape. Now, some of these TV people are good. They are damn good.
Damn good. Yeah.
They can come in there with that camera and do some reportage and just do a good job. Now they're slick.
Yeah.
They know how to handle the thing.
Yes.
That's their business.
Yeah.
The only control they'll need on something like this is, first of all, by God, try to get them to understand what it's about, so then they can handle their visual aspect of it better.
Yeah.
And then you have to control what they do so they don't get smaltsy about it. Into like a tend towards a gimmick type thing. And that has to be sloughed off of it because they'll get too heavy-handed and the visual will override the voice in that case. But they could get into this kind of thing, and with the physical settings around here and most anywhere, and make some excellent programs that if maybe not talk about it, but just at least there would be in a visual package with the sound, which is an important thing. And that could be used by itself as a teaching tool.
Yeah. Yes. You know, a publisher could handle some of this. They could get someone to come down here and work it up into something. And you see, this presents a view of people that's not available.
Could you've got transcribing equipment we can put off on some of that on a cassette.
Oh, yeah.
Some of your better ones.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind having two or three of them on a cassette, short ones. Like I say, people just will not hold still for a long thing unless you've got a whole lot of flash about it.
Let me tell you, Wade, I have found that a specimen won't help. It hinders them more than anything else because they're going to make artistic judgments that they're not in a position to make. It's better just to go by word of mouth, by what somebody else said was in it. I'm not countermanding what you said, but I'm just saying that's my experience. For instance, I let Alvin read Rick's stuff, and he can't read it. All he knows, all I'll tell him about is what's in it.
The period in the wrong place, too, probably.
Yeah.
Your friend up on the lake?
Probably.
Yeah, that was my first school encounter. Got me so hopping mad. That before I even began to think about anything, still made me mad. I reckon I knew what I was doing. I didn't know. He was just because I couldn't put the commas in the right place, he'd flunk me for everything else.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Until I really chewed on him that day.
Yeah,
my God, at least I'm saying something. Why don't you pay attention to that?
Buster's got some beautiful stories.
Okay, see you around.
Sound went over, and the end of this beautiful visit with Wade was Rick this Sunday afternoon, the 8th of October, 72. Channel 1 over around, I'm just guessing 700 say. Channel 1 over on 700, and the end of this beautiful visit with Wade was Rick this Sunday afternoon, 8th of October, 72. Channel 1 over on 800, 700. And the end of the visit with Wade, with Rick, this Sunday afternoon, the 8th of October, 72.
All kinds of things to get that cast back. I couldn't catch it. I couldn't do anything. So this man came up with his dog and just put the dog on that calf. And all the dog did was chase the calf. And the calf wanted so much to get away, they just ran through the fence.
Yeah.
See? And, you know, they serve a useful purpose, and they do know what you want them to do.
Uh-huh.
And you have a go-ahead dog and a stay behind dog, and the go-ahead dog holds the whole herd from getting away from you and busting through everything and going hell-bent for anywhere. So they're really great. But anyway, he gave his dog.
Well, you know, I've never seen dogs or horses work cowards.
You haven't?
No.
Well, horses are fantastic.
All I know is just do it on foot.
Yeah? Well,
I have to come out and watch you tend your cow.
Yeah.
Well, we just, horses are fantastic. You know, it's just bred into them. You can just sit there and they're just working those cows all the time.
Yeah.
They're wonderful. I used to, you know, on the ranch down there, I used to tow, and if I could have one person behind, you know, I'd get ahead with my scout and the pellets, and then somebody would get behind, and I had it set up pretty well. But you have to have a perfect setup for that. You've always got a few calves that are going to suck. You know, just before you get there. And they hold up the whole works,
and
then you've had it.
And you never can quite get close enough to them to hit them with a 2x4.
And a cow is going to stop and stand.
Oh, it's just awful.
Oh, dear. Well, Guy never had very too many cows, but I used to ride old Lucy, you know. She's a little cutting horse, a little white. She loves to bring. That's about the only thing
she really does. Well, it's fun.
Yeah.
I think
but, you know, our cows were so gentle and
tame,
they all you had to do was get behind them and then they just...
Well, that's a super way to do it, I tell you.
No cutting, no rounding up, really.
Well, that's really, you know,
but
that's the way to do it if you can, I think. I really believe in that. I believe in doing everything you can that way, especially if it means not hiring anybody.
And now Guy just goes out and calls them.
Because if I work cows, it costs me $150 a day. So you know you can't do that very often.
No.
3 or 4 times a year is all you can stand.
Yes. That the cows know what they can tell pretty quick where you want them to go.
Oh yeah, like at certain times of year, like what was it, 3 weeks ago, I wasn't ready to sell the steers, but I wanted to wean my heifers.
Yeah.
You never saw such a reluctant bunch of cows in your life. Took us about four times as long to get them into the pen.
Yeah.
They knew it was weaning time. They're about to lose their babies.
Yeah.
And it's just like right now, the bulls know that it's time for them to get their rest, you know, and they're wondering why they haven't. And it's because I am considering changing the bull season. But I can see them looking at me, and it's two of the old ones that have now just taken off and said, look, maybe you forgot, but we haven't. This is our bachelor quarter time. And it's just amazing to watch them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that right? Do you take your little heifers out of sight whenever you wean them?
No, I wean them right in the pen. And this is what?
Even in sight?
In sight?
Of the mamas?
Yeah.
And you can't.
I like this system very much.
Oh, yeah.
Very much. I think it's a lot easier on everybody.
You just pen the calves.
Right. And then the mothers come right up, and they can still sniff their babies, and the babies still know their mothers are there.
Yeah.
But the only thing is that I've never weaned 70 heifers before.
Oh,
the most I ever weaned was about 25. See, we're going to have to, we're what you might call putting, getting rid of some of our old cows. Some of our old cows are 15 and 16 years old,
yeah.
And they don't have any teeth.
Yeah.
And so we decided we need to put, you know, we just need to borrow money from the bank this year to get along on and keep heifers.
Yeah.
So the most, as I say, I've ever kept was 25. This year I had 70. And for 5 days, everything was fine. And then something happened. Something frightened them. And they just went right through the whole works.
Oh.
And I've been repairing it ever since. And they got back with their mothers.
Sounds familiar to me.
But you know what's interesting? This is having this not having ever happened before. In the whole 20-some-odd years, this never happened. What happened was that the mother this way is a very lovely gradual weaning process because the mother had started to dry up. All right, the heifer went back to her. She's never gotten the mother into full production, which therefore means the mother is not being dragged down very heavily with these 500-600-pound calves on them still. And meantime, the heifer had learned to eat molasses, and because she's not getting enough milk, and I'm still giving molasses, she's going on and grazing more on her own. So it's been I think it's been a good experience. I don't know what I'll do it on purpose next time, but it's worked out pretty well.
Uh-huh.
See, the main thing is the mother's not being dragged down.
Yes.
And the baby's sort of becoming more independent on her own without it being forced on her too much. Which I like.
Well, how long were they separated?
5 days that they did not have milk. And, of course, this is an unproductive time of year where I am with all his grass. There's no problem. But I don't have a whole lot of grass, so there's not being a lot of milk being produced.
Mm-hmm.
So the cow really was pretty well dried up. And she's just getting enough, probably, to get her going again, but not too badly.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've got to do that all over again. And this is also very dangerous, too. I got the deputy to patrol my place every hour all night long because these cattle could be, rustled anytime.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
sitting in there in a pen out
oh,
there
yeah.
in the country
right.
and there's nobody there and no way you can lock them out.
Yeah.
So,
oh, of course. They were all
and people just watch you and you. I've gotten so terribly careful about what I do now. Like I was telling you, I sold steers to clubs. For club work this year, 4-H club work. And I didn't know how this worked, but then all of a sudden I get a phone call and somebody wanted a club calf, you know, and I'm not going to hire $100 worth of help to pen my cattle to sell $200 worth of calf. So I said, well, I'll tow them into the pen for you. Well, I did that one time and put molasses in there and got almost all the cattle in the pen and shut them up, and then they came and picked out their steer and took it. Well, then all of a sudden, a week later, somebody else called me up, and, you know, it meant doing this again, and this is just too dangerous. If I keep towing my cows into the pen, anybody's going to be able to do it, you know. So I called them up and just told them, I'm sorry, they'd have to wait till we work, you know, and come get their steers in. But I've just become very suspicious, you know, especially if you have anybody, if you ever have anything stolen from you out there, you're completely trusting stolen, and all of a sudden some of your equipment's gone, this kind of thing. You get, so you just, and I really, I don't know if you get the Florida cattlemen or not, but this issue particularly pointed up the, how much rustling has been going on. And so I just, I'm thinking about it all the time. They say that people watch what your patterns are for feeding and everything.
Yeah.
All the time. And you have neighbors that even will tell their friends who, you know, happen to be in that business of stealing cattle and stuff.
Is that right? Is
yeah,
that
I mean, you know, I've always been a perfectly open individual.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm finding I can't be that way anymore.
Yeah.
Open and trusting and honest, and I can't be that way anymore.
And you learned it from the Florida
Cattlemen. Keep my eye. I also learned it trading with this woman all of the summer. She's an old Florida cracker widow, you know, 71 years old, and watched her husband make his fortune just taking it out of the hides of people, and this is really what she did to me.
Where is she?
She's in High Springs. And you know, I was...
And she didn't let you have the...
No, she didn't, and we met every single thing she wanted, and really it turned out that, well, I don't know what it is. But it was
well,
a bad thing,
let
but
me
I
you.
Hope I learned something.
Okay, she's my niece.
Well, boy, you can have her. You won't be able to believe anything she says. That's the only
fine.
Thing. And that's what's disappointing. See, your tapes, well, her stories were interesting. And as long as I sat there and listened to her, I started treating her like my mother a lot of the time. And then when I started getting fed up, that was the end, I think. Mm-hmm. As long, so you go out there, you can, well, I think you'll do just fine. Talk to her and tape her and... She'll love it. Marvelous stories. And when she came from Ocala, but her husband came from Valdosta, and they started off with mules, and how they picked up each little piece of land, and all the old house, and all the old barns, and you'll get the whole thing. And she'll get to do it twice in 1 year.
You see, it's all circumstantial.
You take her for 4 months. I had her. She's yours now. Maybe you can work my deal for me.
That would be
something. Wouldn't that? Yes.
We've lived with somebody like that for 4 years.
You take the words out of my mouth. They just worked the tar out of me.
God's been worked over until he's a paw.
Oh, I'm telling you, when you get a cracker after you feel it. I've had them after that.
Well, see, we bought the ranch from one. And Brad, my husband, knew really all that. And I did this whole deal. The whole deal. And what a mess it turned out to be. But I'd come home and, you know, we'd talk about it. And I also talked about it to my lawyer. And boy, they knew what I was into. And my lawyer had said a month ago that he didn't think she ever would make a deal. He really knew his old cracker lady. And she was very much like the woman who bought the ranch from.
And she lives in High Springs.
Yes, sir. Between High Springs and Fort White.
She don't live in High Springs.
No, just in between, about 8 miles out.
Oh, that's better.
Got 1,000 acres.
Yeah.
We got to go.
Oh, boy.
We got to go.
Now
we all have families waiting to eat. You're cooking, but we're not.
Oh, this was just... Great
well, this is a real pleasure. I talked too much.
I'll be back when I get that pile at Penny Store.
Oh, you left us a pile. Well, I don't have Penny Store.